You're listening to WGBH Radio. When the floodwaters began to fill streets, basements, and T-stops during last month's storm, many people were shocked. The question is, why? With so much talk about climate change and sea level rise, are we just living in denial? The answer is yes, but as WGBH's Arun Roth tells us in the final part of our series on coastal resiliency, we shouldn't be too hard on ourselves. We're just wired that way.
When Rob Malouf had to rescue his car from rushing seawater last month, it changed how he thought about where he lives.
You know, you think of the South Shore, you think of the North Shore. You don't usually think of Boston, but now I do.
But Boston is a city right on the water. It should be obvious. If the North and South Shores are susceptible to climate change and sea level rise, why not the big city? George Marshall has an answer. He's a specialist in climate change communication and the author of Don't Even Think About It, Why Our Brains Are Wired to Ignore Climate Change. Marshall says people traumatized by extreme weather often want to distance themselves from the trauma.
You don't want to talk about this, and you certainly don't want to talk about how this might happen again or it might get worse.
As an example, Marshall tells me how a few months after Hurricane Sandy, he went and talked to people who had lived through the storm.
And then I asked them, can you tell me what was the last conversation you've had about climate change? And people looked at me as if I was crazy. And nobody could remember having had a recent conversation on climate change since Hurricane Sandy.
Clearly, climate change isn't impossible to understand or face up to. There are a lot of clever individuals hard at work doing just that. So why are we collectively, as a country, as a species, falling short?
Climate change is the policy problem from hell.
Anthony Leiserwitz is the director of the Yale Program on Climate Change Communication.
You almost couldn't design a worse fit for our underlying psychology or our institutions of decision-making.
The Yale program studied the attitude of Americans toward climate change.
At one end, a group we call the alarmed, who are fully convinced it's happening, it's human-caused, and it's urgent, and they strongly support action now.
About 16% of Americans fall into this alarmed group.
To at the very end of the other side is a group we call the dismissive, who are firmly convinced it's not happening, it's not human-caused, and it's not a serious problem. And in fact, many of them basically tell us that they're conspiracy theorists.
Only about 8% of Americans fall into the dismissive group, but as Leiserwitz says, they're a loud 8%. They're very vocal and politically active. Which brings us to a pretty obvious point. Climate change denial here tends to break down along political lines. The reasons for that are complicated, but a big part of it has to do with what social psychologists call the messenger effect.
The messenger is often more important than the message itself.
Now, think, for instance, of the main messenger of climate change action, Al Gore, Bill Clinton's vice president and a fierce critic of George W. Bush. Not an ideal messenger for conservatives.
It's very difficult for them to say, you know, I really loathe and detest Al Gore as a politician and as a liberal, but when he talks about climate science, I think he's got a really important point.
Leiserwitz and Marshall say it's also difficult to motivate people to act when a threat feels very distant in time and space. The human brain is really good at dealing with direct threats, like there's a rock flying towards my head, or that guy might want to kill me. But the threats climate change pose are more abstract. Marshall suggests that a way to help our brains around that is to reframe our thinking.
You don't say to people, well, do you think we should do something about terrorism? And they go, oh, but there's so little that I can do. You know, people don't even think about that. They think, yeah, there is something we should do. I want the government to do something about this.
Marshall says it's crucial to make the narrative personal, and he's worked with leaders of major faiths and political figures to do just that. For the Boston area, in the wake of last month's flooding, he suggests this narrative.
We showed how we as a community can really pull together, how strong and proud we are of who we are. So let's keep that spirit going and let's carry that on so that we're prepared and ready for the next event so we can protect the people around us, our property, vulnerable people, and we can be ready for it because the scientists tell us there's more on its way. In other words, build the narrative of climate change around this spirit of cooperation and community cohesion.
But for the narrative to take hold, people need to talk about what the community went through last month and what's to come. Arun Roth, WGBH, Boston's local NPR.
This story was edited by Sean Corcoran. You're listening to WGBH Radio.